In a spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional lands we gather. Good morning. Before I get going, I just want to make sure this... Okay, the wheels I thought might not have been locked, and I was hoping it wasn't going to roll away on me. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria, and thank you for joining us on this fine Sunday morning. Just as the body must be nourished in order that it be healthy and resilient, so too must the spirit be nourished, and for those same reasons. The table has been set, you have been seated, and on your lap there should be a menu. Let us prepare then for our portion of soul food. My name is Oliver Belisle, and it is my privilege to be your waiter today. I will be providing refreshments and appetizers before our ministerial intern, Chris Wolf, delivers the main course, entitled Remaking Promises.
Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve life, that all to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with each other and with all. I invite for John and Gloria Hopewell to light our chalice this morning. The spark, the flame, lights warm embrace. We light the chalice today, remembering each of the many who have kindled the flame in us, and those whose bright lights have been sparked by the warmth of our hearts. May we remember how light passes from one to another, and may it always be so. I would invite children forward for the time for all ages.
I want to start today by talking with you a little bit about our principles, and then teach you a song that might help if you ever find yourself forgetting them. Hello. So the year was 1962. The Unitarians and Universalists had just come together. We finalized our principles and everybody celebrated. Hip, hip, hooray, we have principles. That was 55 years ago. We celebrated a lot. Things seemed pretty hunky-dory for a little while. But about 15 years later, more and more people began to notice that the principles, well, they weren't quite right. They seemed to really only ever talk about men, and not women, or even people as a whole. In other words, they were a little bit sexist. Now, there is a woman named Lucille Shuck Longview, which I think is the best name ever. Lucille Shuck Longview. She's a Unitarian Universalist from Massachusetts who decided there should be a resolution introduced at General Assembly. That's where all the Unitarians gather together in thousands of people. She drafted a resolution called the Women and Religion Resolution. The resolution was to re-examine our principles, paying careful attention to the words that were used. And for 7 years, people worked hard to come up with the principles we have today, revising them over and over again and improving the language. Many of the folks who did that were women. Not only did we realize that the language was sexist, we also realized that where there had been 6 principles, we needed a 7th. Turns out, we'd forgotten the earth. A new principle, respect for the earth as sacred and that we humans cannot be separated from it, was added. The proposal for the new 7 principles was sent out to all the congregations all over North America, and a year later, in 1985, they were adopted with a few more revisions. And it was time to celebrate once again, and they said, hip, hip, hooray. Our principles are living, breathing, changing. They respond to us and to the world. But it helps if we can remember them. When I started in seminary, the special school that ministers go to back in 2011, I have to say I didn't know a lot about the Hebrew Bible or the New Testament. Matter of fact, I didn't even know the names of the books that made up what they call the canon of Scripture. But on my first day, they said there was a prize for anyone who could recite them all by the end of the week. I have to say, I really wanted the prize, which oddly enough was a copy of all the books, which would have made it easier to study in the first place, but alas. So what I did was I did what I do when I'm trying to remember things, which is put them to music. And I found somebody who had written them all down to a tune that would help me to remember them. And I sang it over and over and over that week while I was out walking the neighbor's dog. I can only imagine that people in the park must have thought I was a little bit odd. I'm going to give them a go right now. We'll see how many I remember. If you know the tune, feel free to hum along. Genesis and Exodus, Leviticus and Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, and then 1st and 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, there's Psalms, and then comes Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Psalm of Songs, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, this is Joel, and then comes Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, and Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and then Malachi. There we go. All the books of the Old Testament, of the Hebrew Bible. Sometimes we need to say things over and over so that they get deep down in us, so that we don't need to search our memory for them anymore. They're just there whenever we need them. Those opening words today about how love is the doctrine of this church, I've been saying those words my whole life. They're the covenant that I grew up with. Our principles are also a covenant, and we're going to learn a song today so that we can remember them. Oliver's going to put the words up on the board, and Braden's going to help us out with the tune. If you're a fan of Julie Andrews,
one, each person is important. Two, be kind in all you do. Three, we're free to learn together. Four, and search for what is true. Five, all people have a say. Six, we're for a peaceful world. Seven, we care for earth and kind. And that brings us back to me and you.
You!
One, each person is important. Two, be kind in all you do. Just listen. Three, we're free to learn together. Four, and search for what is true. Five, all people have a say. Six, we're for a peaceful world. Seven, we care for earth and kind. And that brings us back to me and you.
I invite you to rise as you're willing and able to form the arches as we sing our children off to their religious education classes.
After an uneventful summer day, my oldest daughter asks if we can go to the park. Now, I say uneventful, but what I really mean is uneventful for her. My wife and I spent the day cleaning, grocery shopping, cooking, and performing all the other routine tasks that keep a household running smoothly. I reply, "Dad's really tired, honey. How about we go to the park tomorrow?" "You promise?" "I promise." The skeptical look in her eyes tells me all I need to know. These types of offhand promises, so easy to make, are also the easiest to break. It's not that I don't intend to follow through. As I speak the words, "I promise," I have every intention of making it happen. No, the problem is that there's no way I can ensure that this promise will come true. Promises are like guarantees, after all. How can I guarantee something that isn't fully in my power to manifest? What if I get hit by a car? What if I wake up with the bird flu? You remember that? H1N1? Or what if life gets in the way and I simply run out of time? Any number of things might force me to break my promises. And quite often, this is how they end up. Broken, thanks to some unforeseen event or circumstance. Now, I want my word to mean something when I tell my kids or my wife or my friends or members of this congregation, that I will do something or be somewhere. I want you all to rest assured. But how can I expect this if I keep making promises I may have to break? For a while, I considered reserving my word for things that I can fully control. But then I started compiling a list of those things, and I found it woefully short. I don't control the weather, the economy, or other people. I don't control machines or technology. I don't even fully control my own body or health. My jurisdiction, I found out, begins and ends in this region. I control my intentions, my expectations, my opinions, and when I'm at my best, my reactions. And that's it. So instead of promising that we'll go to the park, now I promise that I will do my best to make it happen. And that's the kind of promise I'm comfortable making.
Good morning. It is nice to be back among you. Feels like a very, very long time. Love is the spirit of this congregation, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Promises. Pinky swear. Cross my heart and hope to die. When I was growing up, there were two kinds of promises with my peers. Promises from the schoolyard and promises from the walk home. Schoolyard promises were mostly benign ones. Promises to ask my parents about going to the movies this weekend. Promises that we would all wear blue and silver tomorrow. Promises that we would be friends forever. A difficult promise to make at 6 years old. If a teacher had you by the ear, you made a quick promise that you were never, ever again going to do whatever it was that you had just done the moment before. Promises made under duress don't ever seem to last very long. But walk-home promises, boy, those were the real deal. Most days we'd head home through fenced passages, down the back alleys and around behind the wall, snaking our way by the least visible routes to emerge suddenly at our back doors. We weren't actually doing anything wrong, but we still didn't want anybody to see us. But sometimes we'd go over the train tracks, and it seemed to me that the train tracks were saved for the big conversations, the hard ones. Like Stephen King's story in the subsequent film Stand By Me, deep truths emerged when we walked the line. I don't know if these stories came out because we were on the tracks, or if we found ourselves on the tracks because the story needed to come out. Much like when we minister to one another, I often wonder, did our story emerge because someone sat down, or did they sit down because we had a story that was waiting to emerge? I remember walks home from school when companions disclosed an abiding love for someone in class, when they shared their concern for sickness in their family, when they revealed an uncertain orientation, and once that they were growing hair down there. Promises seemed always to be for confidences that one needed to keep. They were offerings of vulnerability, and they drew us nearer together when they were shared. But they would not have been shared without the promise. Vulnerability was conditional. Vulnerability is conditional. It remains that way. In those moments, though, the distance between us would shrink to nothing. In some vocabularies, the space between us was joined by the divine, where we were no longer two, but one. This month, at first, our focus is on promises and our particular form of promise in this faith tradition, the covenant. Martin Buber, the Jewish philosopher, once said, "We are promise-making, promise-keeping, promise-breaking, promise-remaking creatures." It is the defining feature of who and how we are. Buber is most famous for his writing on how we are not, except through another. We are irrevocably interrelational, interdependent beings, I and thou. We learn how to be with one another by making offerings of ourselves and learning to trust those offerings of others. We express who we are and what we value in the world, in the words we speak, in the way we live our lives, and by those patterns, by their echoes, by their ripples, the form of our promise to the world emerges. The promises we make to ourselves, the promises we make to one another, the promises we offer beyond. I have to admit that I love Buber's philosophy because it tells me about the mystic divine that I've often felt. He suggests that there are two attitudes with which we can address existence: I and thou, or I and it. The attitude of the I towards an it, towards an object that is separate in itself, which we either use or experience. The attitude of the I towards the thou in a relationship in which the other is not separated by discrete bounds. Not separate at all. Buber uses trees as an example, explaining that we can have a relationship with them that goes either way. We can study the tree, classify it, categorize it, take it apart, employ it. We can make our relationship I to it. We can do the same with people. Classifying them, categorizing them, using them for our needs, treating another as an object, I to it. Or we can choose to embrace I and thou, a dynamic interplay of relationship in which we seek to more fully relate to the other. We can sit at the tree's base and feel its movements, or we can walk along the tracks with another person and feel our own opening. They are attitudes and orientations, and we choose in which direction we will face when the world outside us approaches. And it is in the approach of relationship that the divine mystery is present. Not long ago on Facebook, someone asked what the collective noun should be for a group of Unitarians. If owls gather as a parliament, the crows in the trees outside form a ghastly murder, the swans across the way are a lamentation, and a group of bullfinches are a bellowing, what should we call a group of Unitarians? Suggestions came fast and furious and included a cacophony, a chaos, a choir, and a harmony. Someone asked, why not a justice? Folks generally agreed that a committee, well, just a little too on the nose. Into the fray, Reverend Keith Goheen offered that perhaps we ought to call ourselves a promise. I felt my breath catch reading that. It landed squarely in the heart of what I understand us to be, what I understand Unitarian Universalism to be. We ought to call ourselves a promise. Keith went on to say that he offered it out of UU historian and educator Alice Blair Wesley's suggestion that we really shouldn't bother asking Unitarians what they believe. It's a fruitless question. What we should ask instead is, what makes you promise? What have you promised? Wesley asks, what will you promise? So, what will you promise? Now, covenant, it's a pretty fancy word for promise. The Unitarian theologian James Luther Adams, following from Buber, has rightly pointed out that the first characteristic of human collective existence is commitment. That is, making an agreement, a promise. Promising is a characteristic feature of meaningful human existence. What Adams is saying here is that all our relationships are based on and created out of the commitments we make to one another, either explicitly or implicitly through our promises. In our families, in our relationships, in our friendships, and our communities, we exist in a complex interplay of promises. The promises we make to each other are what hold us together. Simply put, our word is our bond. We are not held together by creed, but by covenant. Because sacred space doesn't just happen for Unitarian Universalists. We make it. We make sacred space by the agreements we make with one another, by the promises we make to one another. It's why at the beginning of small groups, of women's groups and men's groups and youth groups, we write covenants. Indeed, we make covenants all the time. So we can hold one another. So we can make the space sacred and invite vulnerability and the whole of ourselves in. So what does it mean to be in covenant with each other? What are the promises we make to each other that we try to keep with each other here in Unitarian Universalism at FUCV? Our service began with the Griswold Williams Covenant, the one I grew up with. The sermon began with the Blake Covenant. My grandmother knows best. I don't know how many churches I've visited where these covenants were spoken as affirmations or were posted on the wall. Anybody else remember reciting those words? Hands up if they're familiar. Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting. I remember when I started my field placement at Grand River Unitarian in Kitchener-Waterloo. Thank you for coming. They had their covenant on the wall just on my left if I was standing in the pulpit, facing out, of course. It had the same structure and sentiment as the one I grew up with, but for the first 6 months, I muted myself and mouthed the words halfway through because I kept fumbling each time they changed one thing or another. Justice, not peace, hope, not love, joy, not something else. We learn the words and then we change them. We remember their spirit like that song. These covenants tell a story, and in their evolution, they tell us something about who we were, who we are, who we aspire to be. They tell us about the promises we're making and will make. Like our principles, these covenants have evolved. This morning, we sang with the kids a simplified but hopefully memorable version of our principles. I hope that you'll remember it if you find yourself in a grocery line or elevator someday trying to recite them. I'm sure nobody will mind if you break out into song. We forget sometimes that our principles are themselves a covenant. If you open up your hymnal, you'll find right before the list of principles, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote. And then it lists them. Those seven principles are a promise. Our principles are promises we make to the world. They are promises we make to one another. And they're promises that we can make to ourselves. In another way, they are promises that we extend to the whole, to the hand, and to the heart. I've always appreciated the two meanings of promise, the action of making a promise, but also promise as potential. Where we speak most often of covenants as promises between people, this possibility of potential is the space where our covenants most readily meet the wider world, where they're an offer to something beyond ourselves. The mission of this church is a covenant, a promise. When we say, strengthened in spiritual growth, supported in community, energized by diversity, we strive to transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action. We are expressing any number of promises. When we say we're strengthened by spiritual growth, we acknowledge our promise to sit in those uncomfortable spaces where change happens, where learning and growth happen, recognizing we grow stronger by it. When we say supported in community, we acknowledge that we cannot do it alone. We cannot be I without thou. When we say that we are energized by diversity, we are embracing that with each new person we welcome into this community, we are embracing the possibility of change. We are living into the heart of a liberal religion that says that revelation is not sealed, but always emerging. Truth is not given for once and all time. I take comfort in that. I take comfort in knowing that we are a perpetually evolving movement that responds to the world around us, that responds to the new things we learn, the new things we hear, the new people to whom we are exposed. Those things are meant as descriptors of who we are or who we want to be, their promises, as are the actions to come. We strive to transform ourselves. It's a promise. And our world, another promise, through compassionate action, a promise. The mission of this church is a promise to all who come through its doors, and we invite others to make that promise with us. We invite others and ourselves to see or imagine our potential. We invite them to see their own, as we invite you to see your own, your potential, their promise, and we ask of one another, what will you promise today? I ask, what will we promise? Because the promises we make in this congregation, in this denomination, those promises sometimes save lives. I had to miss last week's in-gathering service because I was out of town. It was sad for me not to be here with you. but you might want to hold your compassionate awe since I was at a beachside camp in Hawaii. I was there leading a training of trainers for Our Whole Lives, the comprehensive sexuality education program we offer here at FUCV and in UU congregations across North America. Over the course of a week, we trained 22 new trainers, people who will go on to train facilitators who offer the program to children, youth, and adults, and now beyond. Because in our training, in addition to Canadians and Americans, we also had Indigenous Hawaiians, teams from the Philippines and Trinidad Tobago, participants from Sweden and Sri Lanka, all of whom are bringing the OWL program and its values into their own contexts. Tens of thousands of people will get better sexuality educations because of the work these folks have done and will do because of the work that we have done. It's part of our promise, both our potential and our covenant. In the training, my colleague Wade told a story about how the program saves lives. Wade grew up in a conservative community where fundamentalism was the norm. In school, he had a friend named Adam, and Adam went to the UU church. Wade used to spend his walks home with Adam arguing with him about the things Adam was learning in OWL. Adam was learning that being gay, bisexual, lesbian, all perfectly normal. That there were gay and lesbian families that were happy and healthy. That there was a God who loved him. That being gay did not mean he was not welcome in communion. Now, Wade would argue with Adam, just to make Adam say it again. Just to get Adam to tell him again that who he was a beloved child of the universe, a beloved child of God. He couldn't yet say it to himself. But Adam could say it to him, because Adam had heard that promise from our congregations. At the end of his story, Wade says he really doesn't know if he would have lived through those years without those words, without those promises. Adam would speak our principles, he would speak our covenant, he would tell our story, and by it Wade was saved. Our promises are not for us alone, but for the wider world. What is at stake is what we freely promise to each other. We don't ask, do you believe? We ask, do you want to walk together? We don't ask if you are saved. We ask if you will care about saving life for more than yourself, for more than a few. We don't ask what kind of God you count on, if you count on one at all. We ask if you are willing to take a risk to say, yes, you can count on me. This living tradition, this covenantal faith, offers us a progressive and hopeful vision. Step by step, we move forward freely and together. We see before us and behind us the promise of growing the beloved community, within ourselves and community together and in the world. We know there have been and will be struggles. We know there will be times of movement and times of just barely holding on, just keeping the flame alive. But our commitment is clear, and we know that as we step forward together. This weekend, I invite you to try this practice. Try saying one of the covenants, or our principles, or our mission, as a series of promises. At the dinner table, in front of the bathroom mirror, staring at the ceiling in bed, wherever you like, imagine the words as a promise to yourself. Love is the doctrine of my heart, and service is my prayer. Imagine the words as an offer to a specific other. I will dwell with you in peace. Open the words to the whole world, energized by diversity. I welcome change. Try it. Maybe you'll find yourself opening I to thou. May it be so, and blessed be. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the author of The Little Prince, is quoted as saying, love does not consist in gazing at each other, but in looking outward together in the same direction. It's the same with a community that seeks to make a difference in the world. We must be looking outward in the same direction. This does not mean that we all see the same things on the horizon, nor does it mean that we understand everything at the same time or in the same manner. It certainly doesn't mean we're all going to agree all the time. that does mean that our intention for what is best for this community is headed in the same direction. Together we gaze our eyes in the same outward direction. Come, join hands with another, and let us gaze together. Let us make a promise together. For by our promises, we save ourselves, one another, and the world.